We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Command Center podcast, home of the biggest edge in Dynasty Fantasy Football. My name is still Travis May. I am the Devy coordinator at RotoViz, if you did not know that already. And I'm joined by Curtis Patrick, and he is the Dynasty coordinator at RotoViz. What do those titles mean? Well, I kind of put things together for Devy Leagues, you know, that nerdy format where you can own some college players before they even get to the pros. And Curtis heads up some of the, all the Dynasty content over at RotoViz. And so it's been a blast just kind of looking at the new site and the new happenings going on. We're ready to launch at RotoViz. So just tons to look forward to there. But last week, we actually talked about some Superflex, tight end premium, things like that. A bunch of quarterbacks and tight ends. Maybe you didn't like it because all you want to talk about is rookie running backs and rookie wide receivers. Well, that's great because this week we're going to be chatting about the battle for the running back one spot and some of the most relevant names there. But first, Curtis, what's been on your mind as we approach the NFL draft? I know it's crazy to think that it's like 2 weeks away. Are you just like ready for it to be here? Are you still like in just production mode, like getting a bunch of stuff ready for that? What's been going on with you?
I can't even focus on that right now, man. Right now, I'm just so hyped because of that new drop track before the pod. You might have noticed that we've got some new music. If you're not listening at like 2, 3, 4X to our pod, and that track was courtesy of Gigamen at Gigamen Official on Twitter. And these guys are super rad. I saw that they had posted something where they covered old, like original Nintendo Entertainment System games, and we exchanged some DMs because I nerd out on that. Mega Man 2 is like one of the GOAT NES games of all time, and what you heard was a snippet of their cover of the Dr. Wily level 2 track toward the end of the game, and it is like it's just epic. It's really great stuff, old 8-bit music that they turned into some metal with some double kick, and I love that. I love that stuff. So thank you to the Gigamen, and we're going to try that out for a couple weeks. They also sent us a track from Contra, which is, I mean, that's like the best of all time with the password at the beginning of the game for infinite lives, and so we're going to have some fun with the Gigamen. But to get back to your question, man, there really has been so much going on. We got some new tools at RotoViz that are giving me some new insights into these players as we draw a little bit closer to the NFL draft. And, you know, the Box Score Scout is a tool that I used to cut up some of these guys here about a week or two ago. And between that and, you know, all the analysts putting out their new information, it's kind of refreshing to go back and look at, well, what was the core of this prospect's profile? Because you get into all these different narratives and stuff just gets spoken into truth, whether it's true or not. And I want to just go back to the roots of where I was like back in November, December. And I think that's a little bit of what we're going to get into today with some of these stats. So, I think some of the guys we're talking about today, right? It's our consensus top five from the DCC Rookie Guide. Miles Sanders, this is no order in particular. Miles Sanders, David Montgomery, Josh Jacobs, Daryl Henderson, and Damian Harris. How did we rank those guys back in volume two? That would have been what, mid-February, Travis?
Yeah, I guess, we were putting together those ranks as the combine kind of was just approaching and then really hashed it out right afterwards. So that would have been like the first week of March. So time's flown. It's already been a month plus past the combine.
All right. Well, before we jump deeper into these five guys and what needs to happen with those top running backs for them to land as the running back one in this class, we're going to hear a quick word from our beloved sponsor, the FFPC. Our friends at the FFPC are the world's largest Dynasty League commissioners, and they have brand new startup Dynasty Leagues forming right now at $77 and $250 entry levels. You can play standard PPR, Superflex, and best ball formats. They also have just a few orphan teams left at significant discounts. You can follow them at MyFFPC on Twitter. They tweet some of those orphans out with the rosters occasionally if you want to look behind the curtain before you buy. If you're ready to draft some best ball, FFPC has you covered with drafts filling daily starting at just $35. Go to MyFFPC.com. That's MyFFPC.com, the home of season-long, high-stakes fantasy football. And just a reminder, all new subscribers to the Dynasty Command Center Slack get a $30 league credit, and you can apply that to any startup Dynasty League fee at $77 or higher.
Yeah, you know, I think some of our listeners are actually taking us up on that, because I keep on seeing more questions related to FFPC leagues in our Slack chat all the time, like with trades. Like, hey, this is FFPC. It's really growing. And so I think some people are actually taking you up on that. They must be doing something right over there. But let's just jump right into the running back one discussion. I think there's probably, like we mentioned, maybe five guys. We might get into a couple other names that could shoot up into that conversation. But let's just jump in with Josh Jacobs, because ever since really the national championship game, really the college football playoffs, I think a lot of people have been just kind of assuming that Josh Jacobs is going to be the running back one for this class. Lots of people mocking him in the early first round. I think it all began with that Daniel Jeremiah mock where he actually put him going fifth overall in the NFL draft, which was, well, it's probably not going to happen. But that really started the hype train, and the rest was history. But I don't think he was the running back one for a few of our rankers back around the NFL Combine. So, I mean, we could talk about why that is the case. With you, what is it about Josh Jacobs' profile that maybe makes you hesitate when it comes to making him the running back one?
Okay, so with Jacobs, if you're playing catch up and this is the first that you're listening to rookie running back talk in advance of the draft, yeah. The big question with him is, you know, why didn't he produce? And you have to know a lot of the context at Alabama with the other backs that were there that were holding him down, and that he's a little bit of a late bloomer, wasn't as heralded as a prospect. But the skill set and the film evaluation is what's really driven him to the top. Like, he is film draft Twitter's golden child. Hmm. He has the traits that they love. At RotoViz, it's not that we don't invest in film evaluation. It's that we don't necessarily claim to be on the level with NFL GM and scouting departments in that category. And so we do try to let the statistics, the production, things that are measurable and easy to compare prospect to prospect, we let those things guide us to at least group these players into the right types of tiers, and then we bring in those other types of analysis.
Yeah.
And so Josh Jacobs, the big red flags on him from the Box Score Scout, one of our new tools at RotoViz, are those, you know, production metrics. I gave him a draft position, a predicted draft position of 40th overall. So that'd be like the top of the second round. I think we're seeing him mocked, you know, typically in the late first, early second. So I felt like that felt fair. But when you look at his final season rushing yards, his final season receptions, his adjusted market share numbers, and the absence of a 40 and a cone time at the combine, the comps that he returns, at least from a production standpoint, his best comp, his most favorable comp is Devontae Freeman. And he's like the sixth closest, I guess. So if we just go down his top seven in order of how close the profiles are, it's Kenyon Drake, CJ Procise, Kalen Ballage, Matt Jones, Nile Davis, Devonta Freeman, and Eddie Lacy. So what do you think about that group? And then you being a little bit more talented in the film evaluation area, what would you add as a counter to any of that?
Yeah, it's really weird when you just compare production profiles, especially for some that really are more film focused. But I think it's important to really see that historical comp and just see like players that came out and did similar things. Maybe, you know, some of those guys look quite different as runners and running styles. But I think that Devontae Freeman, obviously he's going to have more draft capital there. You know, the Eddie Lacy, obviously that might be the closest one. And but really, there's not really anyone that stands out as the easy comp to me. Just as the running style, and there's nothing like that translates just directly from like a film side of things. But one thing I do from a film standpoint is I try to pull basically some objective pieces of information that are not so much my opinion, but they're just their truths. Like, the, you know, because I think it's really easy to look at the same film and have 50 different answers. Like when you're trying to say, oh, well, this guy does this really well, and, you know, somebody else could look at it and disagree with you. So really what I try to do, and just a different form of numbers, is really take a look at a six-game sample, a bunch of carries, and as many carries as I can basically get my hands on in six games, because you really couldn't get very many carries on hand with Josh Jacobs. But I take a look at the personnel packages that they're running with. I take a look at the average gain, the box defenders, the number of blocks, the run gap that they choose to go into, and the point of first contact and the yards after contact and things like that, and just see what I can glean from that. And one thing I think that may help Josh Jacobs, and a lot of people love about Josh Jacobs, he's a lot of reps in 11 and 12 personnel, the two most common personnel groupings, and just stereotypical usage that looks like a pro offense. He fits in that mold and has a lot of good experience doing things that he's going to do at the next level. But I think we've talked about this before in prior conversations, maybe more of a zone fit than man blocking scheme fit. But he does have success across every run gap that I've found. So that's good to see. A pretty balanced profile, but he has a pretty easy runway when it comes to just a clear path to running when compared to all the other top guys we're going to get to here shortly. He basically has like 2.5 yards just of free reign all day running behind the Alabama offense, and even more so than his teammate Damian Harris. So as far as production profile, there's lots of questions there. I get it when I look at the film and just objective things you can pull from it, and his success and yards after contact numbers. But it's really not any more impressive objectively than somebody like a Miles Sanders, or especially like even a David Montgomery. Maybe a lesser competition, but not even as impressive as somebody like Daryl Henderson putting up similar numbers or close numbers to those guys. But really, it's hard for me to just get on board and say, oh, that's the obvious running back one, when you've got those kind of meh comps statistically, and then nothing that really screams objective truth. Like, you can't argue that the numbers from film, you really can't argue that they make him the runaway running back one. So there's more questions than I think the people that really love Josh Jacobs are wanting to deal with right now. But I guess we'll find out here soon more as the NFL draft approaches and we actually see where he lands, because I think that'll be really important. I think it was maybe Saturday while we were actually talking about where he might fit. What kind of team or scheme do you feel like would benefit Josh Jacobs most and make you most excited to make him potentially the running back one?
It, not only am I going to have to like the landing spot in terms of his ability to be the three down, you know, true bell cow style back, but I think he's going to need the draft capital too, because let's think about this for a second. You know, we basically have just crushed his college profile from just a measurable standpoint and a production standpoint. It'd be kind of unprecedented. I mean, if he was to be drafted in the first round, I really can't think of an example of a back who was selected early that didn't slay in college. Running backs are compilers by nature. That's what they do. They touch the ball more than anybody. And that is wild to me. So the first thing that I would say is, if he's not the first back off the board and he's not taken by, like, really probably like pick 40, 42, you know, early, the first third of the second round, I'm really going to start to have a lot of those questions, because everything that we've heard is that the film tells the story with him. And if there's enough questions from the NFL franchises that are causing them to differ with the evaluations of everybody in draft Twitter and fantasy Twitter communities, then I think it's really going, those doubts are really going to become, they're going to transition from whispers to screams for me. If he is the first back taken off the board and he is taken significantly earlier than other backs, you know, I think you posed the question as we entered this conversation, what would it take for him to be the RB1? Well, I think first and foremost, he has to be the RB1 in terms of draft capital for me. And then he's going to have to go somewhere where there's no significant competition from number two. You and I were talking on Saturday, and I, for the life of me, can't track down the source, but somebody wrote a piece that I saw, and their thought was that Jacobs is a much better fit for a zone scheme, and they hypothesized that that's why Damian Harris had some of the better per touch metrics, even though they're the same offense, is because he was more disciplined when it came to actually paying attention to whether a run call was man or zone blocking up front. And so, I'm not watching six games on each of these prospects like you are. You know, I'm watching it as it unfolds during the season. I'm going back and watching enough to feel educated on what they do well and maybe any glaring deficiencies that they have. But I'm very much more so a data-informed rookie ranker. And so I think you confirmed a little bit of that for me when we talked. And so I would like to see him in a zone scheme. I don't know that landing in a man scheme, I don't think that, you know, he wouldn't be capable of learning that. But I kind of need all the stars to align for him to be the clear RB1. And if he's not RB1 in the draft, in summation, he's just not going to be my RB1 after draft night. What about you? What does he need?
Yeah, I think there has to be a significant gap there for me, because Miles Sanders, I really like Miles Sanders. I think I have less questions about him than I do just about anybody else in this class as far as running backs go. And we can get into him and his delayed production, you know, being Saquon and all that. But, I mean, I think he has to have a pretty significant gap. I think there's going to be a couple running backs that go in that pick 25 to 36 or 37 range, just because of the teams that are sitting in that range with, in some cases, multiple picks. And, you know, who knows? There could be somebody that trades up just a bit to get into that range too. But I think that we're going to see a couple of guys go there, a slight gap, and then another one, and then probably a drop-off after that. So it'll be interesting to me to see, like, who those top three, maybe four, running backs are and how early they go. Because, I mean, there really could be zero running backs in the first round this year. And I really do think this class looks more like 2014 running backs than it does 2017 or 2018. But that's not to say you can't get good values. I think if there are a couple guys that are close, I'm probably keeping Miles Sanders over Josh Jacobs. If he's taken, you know, for whatever reason, mid-first or something like that, that's going to pop my eyebrows up a little bit, and I might have to reconsider. But if he especially goes after just about anyone, I think we have to start to at least question how much more so does this film really outweigh the rest of his profile being just completely barren of any reason to like him. That's where I am with him. And Miles Sanders, I mean, when it came to the combine, he answered a whole lot of questions this past season. immediately jumping in place of Saquon Barkley and just taking it and running with it and showing that he's an adequate receiver, has the size, has really the vision, and we can get into my numbers. But I'm interested to talk through the comps that you found for Miles Sanders doing the the dive in just from a production standpoint.
Sure. And so just a reminder, the exercise, if you're going to generate, and you guys can play with this tool if you've got a subscription to RotoViz, but take my word for it, for this exercise, you got to enter the prospect's projected draft position, and that's going to give you a tighter list of comps. And so for Sanders, I gave him a mid-second pick 55. I feel like that's going to be, that might be a little low based off of some of the momentum and the leaks that we're hearing now. But I feel like that's going to be within about 10 picks probably of where he's going to go. And his comp list is definitely more encouraging than Josh Jacobs. Still not a home run comp list. There's a guy that we're going to talk about later that has the list that you want. But Sanders certainly more encouraging. His closest comp, Kerryon Johnson, followed by Devontae Freeman, Jordan Wilkins, and Wendell Smallwood, but then ends up with Darius Geis, David Wilson, former first-round pick, and Sony Michel. So lots of upside in that group. A fairly versatile group when you think about their ability to catch the ball out of the backfield. One thing driving the similarities in these profiles is that all of them, except for Sony Michel, had at least 18 receptions in their final year, and a handful of them had at least 24 receptions, as did Sanders in the last year. All of these backs are over 205 pounds, and all of them had pretty quick 40 times. Freeman by far the slowest at 4.58. The rest of them sub, well, Sony Michel's at 4.54, but then we've got David Wilson sub 4.4. And then Geis, Smallwood, and Sanders all in the 4.4 to 4.5 range. So lots of similarities there. I really like that comp group for him because when you think about those players, the ones that have been successful, it was based off a landing spot. Kerryon Johnson looked pretty good in his rookie season, but he landed in a messy committee, and that's not any fault of his own. That's the weird desire of the Lions to put worse players on the field, but. Devontae Freeman, you had to be patient and wait for one season, but then he ended up as the RB1, I think, in his second year.
Oh yeah,
and Sony Michel had a very took him a little while to get cooking, but he had a very successful rookie year as well. So it's really going to come down to where's the landing spot and what's that committee look like, and then the Wilkins and Smallwood pieces, they actually have very similar profiles to Sanders, but those are the weak. Two of the weaker comps in his top seven, in my opinion, just because of the draft position issue. I mean, Wilkins at pick 169, Smallwood at pick 153, just not even in the same stratosphere as where Sanders is going to be selected. So I think that those comps will fall by the wayside a little bit as time moves on. What do you think? You've already told us what you think about Sanders, but what would he actually need? Let's ask the reverse question. So he is your RB1. Yeah. What would cause him to be dethroned from that perch?
I think he'd have to drop like almost to the end of the second round, maybe early third round at this point. That would do it for me, especially third round. But really, end of the second, if he was like the fourth or fifth running back maybe taken, he'd probably drop out of my running back one slot. But there's a lot that I like. I mean, I like his production profile what we have of a production profile. But really what really sold me is when I compared his charting numbers to Josh Jacobs, who was supposed to be much better. He faced slightly lighter boxes because of the personal packages that Penn State likes to run. So they face fewer defenders on average in the box than Alabama does. But because they have fewer blockers in, given that they run 10 and 11 personnel all day, he actually faced much more difficult situations. Had to almost always face an extra defender when compared to Josh Jacobs and really almost anyone in this class beyond just David Montgomery. David Montgomery faced some ridiculously stupid boxes. But what Miles Sanders was able to do on the 6-game sample that I saw was generate yards after contact, just create and force at least one extra defender to miss. And really Penn State's offensive line, and it was not good when Saquon Barkley was there, And it was not good when he was there, and that showed up quite frequently. He was just having to dodge defenders in the backfield quite often and had to really create for himself. And I like that a lot. Obviously, Josh Jacobs is not bad at that, but Miles Sanders just had to get creative given what he was given in that offense. But I think his game translates from a personnel usage standpoint. I mean, it's almost exclusively just 10, 11, 12, almost nothing else. I think he had maybe a couple examples of some wildcat carries, but just very like where the NFL is going, that's what Penn State is running right now. So Sanders, I think, translates in a whole lot of different offenses, and I don't think he'll be very limited given his run gap success and given what he was able to do in unfavorable situations, more so than just about anybody I watched. So lots to like there. It would have to be like some major draft capital just gone for me to not like him.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Sanders, I mean, you're pretty much the person that caused Sanders to rise up the board for me before the combine. And once I saw the athletic performance and had time to reconcile just the whole picture of him, that he was held down by Saquon Barkley, and that, you know, just because his numbers weren't on par with Saquon, doesn't mean that he's a slouch. And I think that's, I've had a chance to appreciate, you know, what he is, and all the measurables are there. I think his comp group and the RotoViz box score scout is certainly respectable. And so I have no problem with Miles Sanders, you know, spending a mid-first rookie pick on him. I'm not sure for me if he would get to my RB1 unless he actually was the first back selected, because there is one other back that has kind of broken out for me that we'll talk about. Really like Sanders. No, we're going to make him wait. We're going to make him wait because I want to talk about Darryl.
Okay.
I want to talk about Darryl Henderson first, because Darryl Henderson is a guy that I've been touting for months and months, and I stand by, you know, what I've been saying. But the RotoViz box score scout doesn't paint a very pretty picture for Henderson's comp group. Now let's think about this. Weight's one of the main drivers. So who are his main comps? They're going to be fast guys who are uber productive, okay, especially in final season. They're going to have draft capital, certainly not in the first round, and we're talking probably later day two, early day three, and they're lighter guys from a weight perspective. This is a group that mostly weighs between 200 and 210 pounds in his top seven comps. The only top seven comp that has like prototype three down back weight historically is Rashad Penny at 220 pounds, and he's his seventh closest comp. He's not even his closest comp. So the group that's returned on Darryl Henderson, Tevin Coleman, closest comp, Bishop Sankey, Amir Abdullah, double, David Wilson, we don't know what would happen there. Injuries derailed him. Did have first round draft capital, but also attended Virginia Tech, a little bit different level of competition than Henderson at Memphis. Kerryon Johnson shows up again. Wendell Smallwood shows up again, and Rashad Penny. So it's not that there's not some glimmers of hope there. You know, Tevin Coleman hasn't been completely useless as a fantasy asset. And, you know, like we said earlier, Kerryon Johnson, you know, showed some promise last year, but a couple big whiffs there too in the top four. And that's enough to give you a little bit of pause. But I mean, geez, you know, tell me a little bit about what you saw when you watched his games, because what I saw was a guy that if he got to the edge, he had the vision to find the seam, and he housed like all his 10-yard runs were just like 50-yard runs because he had the speed to run away from guys. And, I'm hoping that the film on him is more right than the numbers, because I'm just such a big fan. But what did you see when you watched Henderson?
I mean, it's exactly that. Like the 6-game sample that I broke down just snap by snap and carry by carry. I mean, you got 80-yard gain, 78-yard gain, 59, 43, 20, 25, 31. Like it's just littered with gains like that. And that just showed up time and time again. Obviously he got stuffed at times, because it's Memphis and they don't have a perfect offensive line, but it's also not perfect, level of competition. But he still faced a less favorable situation than Josh Jacobs on average in terms of blockers versus defenders in the box. Really more so. Again, I mean, that's going to be a trend as we go through this. And he did have less room to work with on average in terms of actual yards before contact. And he gained a ridiculous amount of yards after contact because once he shakes off that first arm tackle, he's taken it 73 yards to the house. And in the six-game sample I looked at, he actually had just over 6 yards after contact, whereas Josh Jacobs didn't even hit six yards per carry. Just the ridiculous numbers that Darrell Henderson was able to put up and running in all sorts of different personnel packages. Memphis got pretty creative at times this past season, more so than in previous years, I think. Ran some heavier packages with Henderson, ran some wildcat with him. They did, especially if they played a team more than once, or you know they played Central Florida a couple times. They really mix it up, you know, ran some 11 personnel, 21, 22, 20, wildcat. You know, just really, really mixing it up, trying to give teams different looks. And I think that's going to help Darrell Henderson have some scheme versatility at the next level. Obviously, I like the Tevin Coleman comp, I guess, because Tevin Coleman was a home run hitter for Indiana. And so it's easy to kind of make that comp, but there's a lot to like when looking at Darrell Henderson just from a film perspective. And really, I mean, you kind of mentioned this before when we were talking about him, but he's a little bit shorter. So that weight is a little bit, I mean, it's a little bit misleading, right? I mean, so there's some positives.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and some of these other backs were taller. I mean, Henderson does have a 31.6 BMI. That's 80th percentile for a running back.
Exactly.
So, yeah, thicker, the weight maybe not as much of a concern. You know, there's always context and, you know, how big is the frame. But I think for Henderson, he really is going to be landing spot sensitive because will he land in a place where the OC will give him 15 to 18 touches a game, because we haven't really seen that for really any of the other backs in his top seven of the box score scout. Coleman finally kind of got his chance in 2018 with the Freeman injury, and it didn't actually go all that well for him when he was counted on a little bit more, and that's what drove Ito Smith to a little bit of fantasy relevance. So won't spend any more time on Henderson. Just know Travis and I are both big fans. From what we see, but a little bit more sensitive. And I don't know, based off of what I'm hearing, I don't know that either of us would end up with him as our RB1 in any circumstance, just because of some of these questions. Certainly deserving to be in that tier, maybe, but probably not going to end up as the first back off of either of our boards in Dynasty rookie drafts. So before we get on to the next back, I want to pause for a word from our sponsor, Yahoo. There is no green, Travis, like the green at Augusta. And it is Masters Week, baby. And I love the Masters. I love me some major weekend golf. It's the only golf that I ever watch. And Augusta is probably one of the prettiest TV events of the year. Well, Yahoo Sports Daily Fantasy dropped a new GPP this year just for the Masters. It's $100,000 guaranteed in this prize pool with $20,000 to first place. RotoViz has you covered with free PGA DFS content specifically tailored to Yahoo strategies by the one and only Matt Jones. If you're not following Matt on Twitter, Matt Jones, TFR, amazing work with some of his golf models this year. Winning lots of people money and doing pretty well himself. I think the winner of the Yahoo tournament could buy any number of green jackets. Whoever wins the actual PGA tournament, they just get one green jacket. Okay. It doesn't get replaced. They got to dry clean it. You can just buy a new green jacket like every day if you win this tournament. So go to yahoo.com/dailyfantasy right now, and you could be celebrating on Sunday evening your second place finish, because I'm gonna win that thing.
Wow, that's some confidence you got there, considering you watch you only watch major golf events. I mean, I don't know, it might put you at a disadvantage. So if you like taking money from Curtis, we should have phrased it as that.
Hey, the less you know, the better in a GPP, my friend. I'm not afraid to click the names that no one else will click.
That's probably, there's some truth to that for sure.
Yeah.
Well, are we going to make him wait anymore? Are we going to make him wait one more running back? Or
no, let's talk about the box score scout all-star, David Montgomery. So you talked a little bit about what he saw in terms of boxes. And before I even talk about the box score scout, let's just remind people of what the profile of David Montgomery looks like. He's not a guy who was yards per carry star. He was the focal point of opposing defenses, even though that team had Hakeem Butler. David Montgomery was enemy number one, priority number one for opposing defenses. David Montgomery broke Pro Football Focus's broken tackles metric. I mean, he set a new record, had over 100 broken tackles last year. Just last year, not his career, last year, okay, and on over 200 touches. So, you know, every, like, what, touch and a half, he's breaking a tackle. I mean, just insane. So, you know, I know we didn't get cone metrics from him at the combine. I'm not sure that we need him. He proved that he was plenty elusive by his body of work. So in my workup for David Montgomery, I gave him a draft position of 50th overall, so mid-second round, similar to Miles Sanders, just a couple ticks before. Reminding the listeners, he had a 40 in the low 4.6s with a weight of 222, and it returned a really, really exciting top seven in terms of comps. This top seven comp list includes the names Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, Marlon Mack, and then we get Jeremy Hill, Mike Davis, and Wayne Gallman. So other than Gallman and Davis, all of those guys have had significant, significant fantasy success. I mean, don't turn your nose up at Jeremy Hill. It might have been situation-based, but he was a total fantasy stud for his first two seasons in the league, and he's one of the weaker comps in this list. Gallman and Davis, of course, in this list aren't going to be able to hold a candle in terms of draft position when it's all said and done to Montgomery, because I do strongly believe he's going to go off the board by the end of the second round. But man, I mean, I don't really care what the guy's name was. I mean, you know, it could be Benny Cunningham, whatever his name is. If his comp list is Todd Gurley and Le'Veon Bell in his top seven, you have my attention, especially when you are already in my upper tier of running backs. And this comp list is so impressive that, you know, he is squarely in the conversation for my RB1 now. When we did our rankings back in February, I had him in my top four. I was souring a little bit coming off of the combine that wasn't quite as impressive as some of the other guys. But there's always that immediacy of what happens with the new information, because you watch these guys all year and you track their stats all year and you compare them to historical comps all fall, and then you get this new information of the athleticism at the combine, and it's just hard to not overreact to that. And I think I did that a little bit with Montgomery, if I'm being truthful. And now, when seeing how he still compares favorably to some of the best fantasy backs of the past decade, I'm all aboard. I'm all aboard with David Montgomery. So let me know what you think with him, and what would he have to do to leap Miles Sanders, your RB1?
You know, he's almost like the forgotten guy for a lot of people, because for a while in Devy leagues and people just that were pumped about the 2019 NFL draft really thought that David Montgomery was going to be the running back one for a while, just because of what he was able to do just a couple of years ago. And really even up through probably late last fall, I think a lot of people were already kind of crowning him the running back one. And then Josh Jacobs came along. People looked at Daryl Henderson. People looked at Miles Sanders. And I think they're probably just overthinking David Montgomery a little bit. With comps like that from a statistical standpoint, and then the elusiveness that he brings in the game, and the success that he had against basically the most unfavorable situations, when you combine the number of blockers in the box and his blockers to defenders, things like that. And then basically generating like 75% of his yards after contact. I mean, it's just absolutely absurd what he was able to do. And really the beating that he was able to maintain on two seasons of 250 plus carries at Iowa State. And really just from a charting standpoint, he had probably... He's a little bit interesting because he actually, again, had some scheme versatility similar to Daryl Henderson. A lot of times you'll see kind of smaller schools You know, maybe non-Power 5 schools really mix it up with some strange personnel packages. He didn't have a huge sample outside of the typical stuff, but he had experience doing just about everything and found success on just every, really just about every personnel package you could really come up with. And whereas, you know, with Josh Jacobs, who may have had more success running tight end left and like left guard, like and maybe tight end right, like outside, David Montgomery had extreme success running straight up the gut. Basically, the lowest expected value run gap that you have is right up the center when you look at it from an analytics standpoint. But he was able to generate yards after contact, running it basically in the most inefficient gap there is in football. And so I think if he actually gets utilized in probably a more efficient way in the pros, that yards per carry is going to level out a little bit by comparison. And that elusiveness, I want to see what that does when you get him in space consistently at the next level, because I think he can win. And with comps like that, it's a lot to get excited about. So I think really it's just going to take a little bit more draft capital from him to push him over the top. If there's a significant gap between him and Sanders, I think I'd probably give Montgomery the edge.
Okay, so let's just play radio for a second. So David Montgomery, top of the second round to Tampa Bay. Is he your RB1?
Well, Tampa Bay scares the crap out of me in general, but and just they like to ruin running backs real quick.
But Bruce Arians with the David Johnson history, yeah.
I think I would probably give him the boost there, especially if Miles Sanders dropped to maybe pick, you know, close to maybe pick 60-ish or something in that range, and you had David Montgomery going in the 30s, and that would probably do it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got one final comment I wanted to make, kind of harkening back to the BMI comment that you made about Darrell Henderson. He had a BMI of 31.6, which was 80th percentile. Montgomery, you know, obviously just by measure, much larger back, 2 inches taller, about 16 pounds heavier, but his BMI is 31.9. I mean, they have almost identical BMIs. So shrink them down. And that maybe would give people a little bit better picture of Henderson's compact chunk, I guess, is what we would want to say there. So a compact chunk. So the last guy we want to talk about, and we're not going to ask if he's going to be the running back one in any circumstance, because I think the clear answer is no. So let's take more of an approach of, is there a circumstance, or can you see maybe putting him in the conversation with these other four guys? Because you said that David Montgomery has been a little bit forgotten in terms of being at the top of the group. Well, Damian Harris has kind of been forgotten or not talked about much at all, because he's been kind of a cut below. Josh Jacobs, his backfield mate, who had less production, has, you know, really just outshone him ever since college football playoff and all the attention that he got for his strong play there. But Damian Harris, talented back in his own right, and he held down that backfield in Alabama for a good reason. I mean, he was highly touted as a recruit and didn't necessarily do anything to play his way off of the field. I'm assuming a mid-third round draft position for Damian Harris. So is that about where you would have him before we even get any further in the comps?
I think maybe. I think that might be where draft Twitter has him. But I wouldn't be surprised at all if he got the Alabama back boost and was somewhere in the mid-second. And I know that there have been some mocks with him in that conversation as well. I think the sweet spot's like really like the beginning of round three probably would be about what I expect for him, that 2-3 turn. Just because I have to mix in what I believe. I think third round feels right for him, but I think that he might get a little boost there just because he may not be sexy, but he turns the yards out. So NFL teams are going to like that.
Sure. And there's some teams that even in 2019 are saying they want to build around pounding the rock. We're hearing that type of language in Tennessee and in Baltimore, and you know, the NFL is cyclical, and regardless of what data might tell us, you know, head coaches know this. And you know, as defensive schemes change, there might be some opportunities there to pound the middle. So it only takes one team. That's the other thing about the NFL draft. It only takes one team to yep. drive somebody's draft position. So, okay. So you say maybe anywhere from the mid-second to the mid-third. So if anything, this list of comps might be on the low end for Damian Harris's query that I ran. Let's think about just cloud level, what types of players are going to show up on a comp list for Damian Harris. So they're going to be players who aren't drafted on day one. These are definitely day two prospects. They're guys with reasonable size. You know, Damian Harris, 216 pounds at the combine. They're guys with average-ish speed. You know, he ran mid 4.5s in the 40. And they're guys that don't necessarily have stellar production. Harris split touches. I mean, his final season rushing yards, 876 yards for Alabama this year. He did have 22 receptions. Jacobs is getting all the love as the receiver for the Crimson Tide and as the receiving prospect, but Harris has requisite receiving ability. So these are guys that can catch the ball, maybe not known for it, but can catch the ball. So Harris's closest comp in the box score scout is actually Devontae Freeman. He also returns Kalen Ballage, Kenyon Drake, another Alabama back that never locked down, I guess, dominant carry share. Mike Gillisley, Kristen Michael, Sony Michel, Jonathan Williams. When you said late second, like late second, early third,
it's like, oh no,
the buzzer went off because Kristen Michael, 62nd, right in that range, with some similar measurables to Harris. But of course, he was kind of a combine all star and had the, you know, just the insane off the charts three cone time that led him to that, I think. But so that's a comp list for Harris. I think, you know, Freeman showing up for a lot of these guys really because of the draft position, you know, as a fourth round pick, and some of these guys were, you know, projecting in the mid to late second or even in the mid third, like Harris here, he's going to start to show up because he's so far from the first round in a lot of these comps. And then of course the average 40 time as well leads him to continue showing up. But, you know, we also see Sony Michel and Kenyon Drake. I mean, say what you want, if they would just give him the ball, he's been a great fantasy producer. But for whatever reason, Adam Gates will like to wait until about week 11 to realize that every year. So we'll have to see what happens in 2019 with the new coaching staff there. But the bottom of this list is a little scary. Ballage, maybe we can argue that the jury's still out. Ballage might represent what would happen if the bottom fell out of Harris on draft day and something went awry and there was something we didn't know about him and he really slid. Mike Gillisley, again, you know, really low end there. I don't see him falling that far. But Jonathan Williams as well. So there's some guys here that similar size, similar athleticism, similar final season production from Power 5 schools that didn't pan out. So what do you see with Harris, and what would you need to see in terms of draft capital for him to enter the conversation as a tier one running back, even if he's not your RB1?
Yeah, I think he is kind of in that. I guess we've kind of hit this before, just going back and forth in conversation, but he's kind of like in a tier of his own. And so entering into that conversation, I think if he was in that mid-second range, I think people would go, maybe I need to take a second look here. Especially if he passes up one of those guys that we have in our, you know, top four range right now and was actually drafted ahead of them. I think we have to put him in the conversation because of the success that he was able to have and having a 1,000-yard season for Alabama, which just doesn't happen all the time unless you're Derrick Henry. And really holding on to that job in the way that he did. And I really like what I found just breaking it down and trying to find some objective takeaways from his film. And he faced harder boxes than Josh Jacobs and just grinded out yards. And there's really no arguing with that. I don't know if it was Alabama's just decision to, and it wasn't really that they tipped their hand, because they had, from what I could tell, a pretty even split run pass between those two backs. But defense has just treated Damian Harris a little bit differently in terms of how they would align and how they would make sure to have like an extra defender in there about 50% of the time, actually a little bit more so than that in the sample that I saw. He faced an extra defender and more so than Josh Jacobs and was just able to grind it out. He wasn't always the big flashy guy, but he'd run a defense down and do his job. And then Josh Jacobs would catch a pass in the flat and take it for a while, or, you know, he'd kind of get a big runway and, you know, break an arm tackle and take a 59-yard, carry in prime time against Georgia and make himself look really good. And so people just kind of forgot that Damian Harris was really there. But really, it's all about the draft capital with Damian Harris. People just need a reminder because he answered a lot of the physical questions. He answered the production questions. And really, he just didn't have the flash that people wanted because they were watching Josh Jacobs. But I think he's right there in that conversation. And if he gets anywhere near pick 50-ish, I think that's going to boost him up into the conversation most definitely.
Okay, well, let's pull this all together because, we can have this conversation, but if it's not going to impact how we actually draft in our own Dynasty rookie drafts, then what are we really doing here? Well, I'm in the middle of the Elite Lemonade Dynasty League rookie draft right now, and I had the 106 from a previous trade. I selected, after I knew that I was going to be able to trade for the 107, I went ahead and selected Josh Jacobs at 106. And I had immediately traded for the 107 to move up to take David Montgomery. And that was because of what I saw in the box score scout. So I've got, in that league, I'm walking away with who we kind of think the NFL has evaluated by film as the number one guy. And then kind of who we think doesn't have bad film, but the analytics are maybe saying is the strongest prospect in the class. I got each one of them, and so it's kind of cool because the way this conversation that we're having is, what's the most important part of a prospect's makeup as we evaluate them? Well, I kind of got the analytics guy and the film guy, and I can just root for both of them to score fantasy points, but throwing two darts there, two very different types of darts. But I think my main takeaway here is that I do like the top of this running back class still to be NFL producers. There's been a lot written, a lot spoken about that this is a weak running back class, and there's certainly like hardly any depth to it. I will agree there, but there is no reason that the five guys, really the first four that we talked about, but even Harris, there's no reason they can't be reasonable fantasy producers or even top-end fantasy producers with some of the teams that are looking for their majority market share leader in the backfield going into this season. So I'm going to, since Sanders is your number one, we've had this conversation now. If you were in the same situation, you got the 106, let's say you've taken Sanders off the board, 107 falls in your lap, which of these guys are you taking as your number two?
So 106, I've taken Miles Sanders, and he's the running back one off the board. And who's my number two out of this crew that we discussed tonight?
Yeah, let's assume everyone kind of goes where they're projected. So we're gonna say Jacobs goes in the early second, Montgomery goes in the mid second.
Okay, well I think I would have to go with Montgomery given what I know. I think I just have more questions than anybody. I'm going to end up with zero shares of Josh Jacobs, and it's not because I dislike him completely. I think that there's just always going to be somebody that likes him more than me. And I think today, given the comps, given the film, given the elusiveness, I think I would lean Montgomery.
I love it, man. That's actionable. I think that the listeners can apply that. And we took the long route, but we arrived there. So if you're somebody that's scared a little bit by Sanders in the 1 year, or you don't like Penn State for some reason, Montgomery's kind of this late evaluation period star for us, and Ryzen is a target for us in the mid first round of Dynasty rookie drafts. So if you don't own a pick there, and you just got to get yourself some backfield production, maybe consider trading into that range for David Montgomery in 2019.
I like it. I like it a lot. But that's probably all we have time for on this episode, and probably more than we really had time for anyway. But I appreciate you following along and joining us again for another episode. Keep in mind, we're going to be talking rookies for a while, but the rookie guide that we put out, the second edition, is still available. That's jam-packed with all types of good content with rookie coverage, and we'll have the third edition out after the NFL draft. You can check that out and get your copy at dynastycommandcenter.com. Curtis, thanks again for joining me this week.
No problem. I'm going to go play some Mega Man 2.
Yeah, that just for the nostalgia factor and the soundtrack, apparently, of course. But you can find Curtis on Twitter at CPatrickNFL. I'm Travis May. You can find me at FF_TravisM. Thanks again for joining us for another Dynasty Command Center podcast. And until next time, you guys just keep on living that Dynasty life.
Summer's slipping away, so grab hold of amazing at California's Great America before it's too late. Buy next year's season pass and get unlimited visits this year to experience rides, shows, and attractions. That includes incredible coasters, Boomerang Bay, and an amazing Peanuts-themed kids area. Get this special offer for as low as 11 payments of $6.50 after an initial payment. Hurry to get the best price on the most fun you can have. Buy your 2020 season pass now at cagreatamerica.com.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.